I wish I'd done some of the hard things back when I was young. I'm not nearly, I'm pretty slow now. I set a personal worst for 100 miles last year. I was like 31:21. So, you know, I used to run, my worst was 25:10. That was for a decade or I don't know how many, dozen or 15 years, that was my worst finish. And the last 5 or 6 years, it's been, I'm just really happy to finish, period.
I'm Trey.
I'm Quest.
And we're your hosts. Each week, we'll seek out and interview the heroes that live amongst us.
And each week, we'll ask them to tell us the story of an adventure that challenged them, stuck with them, and forced them to grow.
This is our truest adventure.
I'm from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. So go to Montana and head north.
Yep.
Basically. And on my webpage, I've got a map of states I've run ultras in, and they kind of run a bunch of races in Montana. My next one's going to be in Wyoming, and I kind of run things on the way home sometimes. And I grew up in Canada, spent 30 years there, started running ultras there. And when I moved to Oklahoma, there really weren't any ultras here, but they were in Kansas and Texas, so just kept doing them.
And you're living in Oklahoma right now?
I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And yeah, I came into this as a triathlete. I used to do Ironman Canada and kind of quit doing triathlons last century, and because I really enjoy ultra marathons much more. But I like Tulsa very much. It's a great city, a lot of good music. There's a ton of ultras here now because of the Taters, which are the Tulsa Area Trail Ultra Runners.
Oh,
in fact,
wow.
I ran a race of theirs on Saturday. So I can now run out of my doorway, and within half a mile or so, there's a couple of different ultras.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool, considering there weren't any when I moved to Oklahoma at all.
And you said the group is called the Taters?
Yep, T-A-T-U-R.
They're winning for the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so what brought you to Tulsa then from Saskatchewan? And
I originally moved to Stillwater. I lived there for a few years. And I was a postdoctoral fellow at the vet school. I work with, I'm a virologist, and I have a PhD in veterinary microbiology. So I came down there to work with monkey viruses. And then I just kind of stayed, and now I teach at the Human Medical School here in Tulsa. It's part of OSU, so I've been at OSU since 1994.
Wow. Okay, so for the listener at home, mm-hmm. And for the listener that's asking this question right now, mm-hmm. Could you break it down into layman terms on what it is that you're actually doing? Like, I heard everything you just said, but don't understand what you do.
I teach medical microbiology to medical students, and I teach virology to grad students and some undergrads, and I do research that's mostly based on diagnostic assays, developing and setting them up for different kinds of viruses.
Wow.
Right now, well, yeah.
Huh. That's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good job.
And it's like towards the end of like trying to find vaccines for these viruses or just learning more about it or?
Well, I actually, I've isolated a lot of viruses from non-human primates. I work a lot with baboons. Uh-huh. So baboon CMV and, but originally I developed diagnostic assays for some other reasons, and now I do things for more basic science, sequencing genomes to determine how the genes are organized and how the different viruses are related to each other. So totally unfundable, but
man,
yeah. I used to do NIH research, but not for a while.
That totally unfundable, that becomes one of those like nerve-wracking, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I get bits of money from here and there, and right now I just took a bunch of DNA over to Stillwater this morning to be sequenced. There are a number of bacteriophage genomes these are bacterial viruses that were unknown, that were isolated by a student. We've cloned bits of them and we're trying to sequence them to see what they actually are. So it's real. I find it really interesting, but
I feel like I need to read like 15 to 1,000 more books right now. That's how I feel in this. It's amazing. So, you know, I've done a few ultras. The one that we just all kind of did in Mississippi at the same time. I wish I would have met you there, but I've done that a couple of times. I've gone over to Atlanta and done it. There is the question that you always get asked, like, so how did you get into ultra running? And at some point I want to ask you that question, but like, how did you get into this as your career field?
Well, I'm a biologist originally, and way back in the early 80s, my advisor was a cytogeneticist, and she was a really astute woman, and she steered me into molecular genetics, which was kind of would turn out to be the coming thing. So I'm really a molecular biologist, and I do. So I had a choice between doing work with plants or work with viruses. Where I was a student, there's a huge vet school, and with lots and lots of research money and lots of grad students. So if I went there, I would get a good education. And the other place was a plant, part of the National Research Council. It was another big thing. Plants weren't that interesting. Viruses were way more interesting than plants. So that's how I ended up there. And I got recruited to come to Oklahoma to work with the person in Stillwater, because we'd met at a meeting. And when I was looking for a postdoctoral fellowship, he made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and I got a job here and stayed. So
that's awesome. And so when you're talking about working with viruses, every time you keep saying virus, the layman that I am, I just want to ask you, like, have you seen the movie Contagion?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, is that going to happen at some point? Because no. I'm deathly afraid of that happening.
No. If smallpox is released as a bioterror weapon, then it could happen. But viruses kind of co-evolve with their hosts. And the viruses that kill everybody, well, they don't spread anymore because everyone's dead. So, and the people, the host that dies really easily from the virus, well, they don't pass on offspring. So you kind of reach this equilibrium where the viruses infect and cause big problems with some people, and some of the hosts are resistant, and otherwise the viral information, you know, genetics doesn't get passed on from generation to generation.
Is there anything that we could be doing right now, just for Marquest and I and any one of our, you know, handful of 100 listeners, is there anything that you could give us like some insider tips on how to make sure that we are the living?
And I'm guessing it's not going to be limited to washing our hands.
Actually, that was the thing I was going to say.
Holy smokes.
Wash your hands. That is the number one thing you can do pretty much. Okay, I'll tell you right now, the virus that's going to kill you in this country is influenza. Oh, people don't really think much about it. Here in Oklahoma, there has been about 2,300 people hospitalized this year.
What?
And it's a big, people don't really think much.
In 2017, Earl?
Yeah. No, in this influenza season, which started probably late November.
Okay. Well, that's still not, still only 2 more months.
Yeah. So just get the vaccines. They really do a good job. And personally, I don't travel to the tropics because, you know, there's a whole lot of nasty, nasty, nasty things you can get. My wife dragged me to Hawaii once, which I loved. But I spend most of my vacations in temperate North America or sometimes in Europe.
This isn't good. Question, as soon as you said the tropics, we looked at each other and we look out the window at the studio and it's like, we're right on the border of the damn swamp here. This is terrible news.
Oh, God. And I spend I think I mentioned to you, Earl, when we were running, I lived in Puerto Rico for a year and a half, and I still make frequent trips back. Now I'm just I actually feel like I have a fever right now.
Well, chikungunya is the thing to worry about when you're heading into that kind of area, Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. It's a big mosquito-borne virus, and it's they don't want to kill you. I mean, it'll just make you miserable for a while.
Chikungunya.
They give you some arthritis, you know.
It will give you arthritis?
Well, yeah, it can. And some of the sequelae after you've recovered that's one of the things. Chikungunya comes from a Swahili word that means all bent up. and I can't, not sure if I say it right. We call it chick, but it's one of the mosquito-borne viruses. I've been telling people it's coming, it'll be here soon. And then Zika kind of jumped in and stole the thunder.
Yeah, Zika got all the headlines, and that chick just...
It isn't here yet, so...
But oh, wait, you're saying the chikungunya is still coming to the States?
Coming soon. It's like a... right now, we're dropping the trailer. This is the interview episode with Earl, but the trailer is chikungunya.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll plug somebody else's spot. This Week in Virology, TWIV, T-W, is fantastic. It's, if you want to listen to something about viruses, when I drive back and forth to the main campus in Stillwater, I often listen to podcasts of it. It's, they're some of the best virologists in the world, and they present things you can understand, and it's fun. So.
Say it. What's it called again?
This Week in Virology.
This Week in Virology.
It's a TWIV.
TWIV. And you can download them from the computer.
I'm going to be honest. On your recommendation, I'm going to give it at least an episode, but I'm so freaked out from our 10-minute conversation, I'm not sure I can make it.
Yeah. But, okay, so you don't listen to podcasts when you run, but you run a really long time.
Yeah, I like to do 50s, milers, and 100-milers, and some long 100 or 120-milers. I got my eye on the Tahoe 200. I'm just trying to get my wife worked into the state where she'll let me go and try that one. So,
a 200-miler?
Yeah, it's run around Lake Tahoe. You have 72 hours to do it, and it's I think it'd be fun.
What's the elevation on that?
It's not too bad. I can't remember. I have altitude issues, so I try and stay like 8,000, 9,000 feet. I don't try not to go over that unless I can go out there and acclimate.
It's so crazy because, yet again, you look out the studio window and
we're like negative feet.
Yeah, we're below sea level here. You say 8,000 and just trying to keep it. I think about 8,000 feet and it's sucking air.
Right. Start getting short of breath just thinking about it.
Well, actually, most people do pretty well. It's up to 6,000 to 8,000, and then I start noticing at 10,000, and then I've dropped out of races at 13. So didn't get there ahead of time.
Okay, Earl. So where does the running start? Were you an athlete as a kid growing up?
Yeah, I did a lot of I did a lot of sports and played hockey and things like that, but I never really started running until I was in my 20s. I actually started out as a triathlete because I didn't want to, figured if I just did one thing, I'd be bored. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of friends that I didn't realize at the time were really, really good triathletes, like coming seventh at Ironman Hawaii, and I didn't realize how good they were. So they kind of talked me into doing triathlons, and I could run, I could run to 20 minutes for 5K, which isn't very fast when there's a lot of people doing it in 15, 16 minutes. Mm-hmm. So when I started, the longer I would do 10Ks, and because they're more of a challenge, and the longer I went, the higher up in the field I would be. So it kind of led me to do longer things. I like the challenge too.
So you just kept going longer to keep like bettering your finish, your overall finish.
It was a challenge, and I was in a pretty hotbed of triathlons, and there was a Ironman Canada, which is out in British Columbia, as a lot of people went to do that. So that sort of became my goal, and for many years, that's what I trained for and did. I did it 93 through 98, and
you did Ironman Canada for 5 years running?
I had won five finishes and one DNF, so... One visit to the intensive care, learn some things, cost a lot of money.
Oh, my goodness.
But back then there weren't races. The first ultra marathon in my province started in 1991. So I was going to actually run it, but I had a little knee problem from running the marathon. And the next year I had pneumonia and couldn't run it. So I ran it in 93 and 94. And then I moved to the States, and I was able to, within driving distance of Oklahoma, there's quite a few good races. So I started doing them, and although in those days I still trained and did Ironman Canada, but I kind of got away from I did triathlons and haven't done one since maybe like 98 or 99. I love ultra running. And so,
Earl, please tell me so that it makes you sound more human. Mm-hmm. Like when you're saying you jumped into doing triathlons, like where they're smaller, because I think I mentioned to you, I have the goal of doing a triathlon before the end of the year. Like, were there smaller ones you did, or this was just from jump you were doing Ironmans?
No. I started, the first triathlon I did was, they're called them Olympic distance. So you swam 1,500 meters, and then you did a 40-kilometer bike ride, and then you did a 10K run. Oh. And so those were, the most, I did a half Ironman the second year, and the third year I did Ironman. So, I didn't jump, you can't really prepare yourself, I don't think, for doing Ironman or doing a 50 or 100 mile run just from a few months of running. So.
Right.
Okay. So when did you meet your wife?
Oh, no, only about 10 or 11 years ago. Okay. So I'd been doing this. She's kind of, resigned to it. I was doing it when I met her and still do it. And she's not thrilled sometimes.
So it's like your version of the model trains, right? That are up in the attic. And you're like, I'm going to go up there for the weekend and play with the trains. And your version of that is, I'm going to go out there and run for 72 hours.
Well, she can't run because of a car accident. She had back injuries. So she's my crew. She crewed me in, 100-mile races and until we had children. Now it's I go off by myself and she stays home with her daughter.
How old is your daughter?
Seven.
Seven. Congratulations.
In fact, I just bought a pair of running shoes today for her second pair. Yeah. And we're going to run the scrub run here at work on Saturday.
Run. What is that?
Scrubs are like the greens that doctors wear.
Definitely know those.
Yeah. So this is one of the oldest races in Oklahoma. It used to be a 5-miler. It's a 5K now. But then my daughter and I are just going to do the fun run. But she did a 3-hour timed run.
Yeah, I was about to say, she's a bit of an ultra runner by her age range already, right?
Yep, she did. She went 8 miles this year, so she's pretty happy.
Oh, my goodness. And how many miles did she do last year?
7.5.
Oh, man. So just keep ticking up. And
that's the idea.
My goodness.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you how I kind of got started in this. Way back when in the late 80s or early 90s, I had two friends that were, one was an expatriate Brit and the other was an Australian. This is in Canada. And they had a long running argument about, body type, which if you were short and stout and trained, would you do better than a tall, thin guy? And so they had a race called the Wombat. And the entry fee was a case of beer. And you showed up at the race start and whoever won the race got all the beer and had to have a party at their house. And they spent years trying to talk me into running it. And I'd say, it's 3 miles. That's, that's crazy. So they eventually got me to run it. And in fact, I won it 1 year. And then I started thinking about doing triathlons and running a marathon. That's 26 miles. That was, really crazy. And I thought about doing Ironman. I mean, you do 100-something-mile bike ride, then run a marathon. That's extremely crazy. Yeah. And eventually I did that and moved to the States. And there was this race across the U.S., which was running through Kansas. And friends of mine were crewing David Horton in it. And, I thought, that's really, really crazy. But I haven't done that one. Yeah. I'll have to wait till I retire, I think, to run across the States.
Well, and, Earl, how many, just for context, I know you have a website. It's www.earlblewett.net, right?
Yep, that's right.
You have a map. There's a section there about your ultras you've run. You kind of do a post-race write-up. You have some photos. You have maps. And then you have a general map of all the places where you've run ultras, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's my me page.
Yeah. How many ultras have you done total?
This Saturday was my 75th finish.
Oh, wow.
So, and I haven't updated the map. I'm busy at work. I have lots of friends that have run more, way more. So but I have a lot of strange friends, I think. So
your 75th finish, your longest one is 120 miles so far?
Yep. Yeah. Then that's the fat dog up in British Columbia. I've done it twice. It's it's a fantastic race.
What makes it so fantastic?
Well, it's extremely well organized. It's run through three of the most beautiful provincial parks in British Columbia, which is one of the most beautiful provinces in Canada. And the support, I mean, last year they cut down 1,500 trees, or cleared 1,500 trees off the trail. So you're running point to point, and it isn't that expensive. And, you know, they got 48 hours to do. It's probably like 125 or 126 miles, but it's a lot. It's just wonderful. I walked it the first time I did it because I wasn't feeling well. And last time I did it, I kind of had a little knee problem. I couldn't run downhill, so I had a lot of walking. It was faster, but walked more. But,
it's like always the downhill when you have a knee problem, right?
Yeah, so they were pain, yeah.
You don't mind me asking, how old are you?
52.
So I have a question that, uh-huh, like, I think this is the real, like, gold to give away to us and our listeners. Like, what's the secret to longevity? At 52, you've done 75 ultras, ranging anywhere from, like, I guess, and there's, like, 75 ultras, and then, like, how many Ironmans on top of that?
I did Ironman Canada 5 times, and probably ran marathon. I don't know. No, I don't run many marathons. We were talking, a friend of mine who was race director on Saturday, he's run 100 and something marathons, you know. And I thought he'd run more ultras than I have, but he hadn't. But he runs a lot of them. So.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, but like,
I don't have that much longevity. At the race Saturday, there were 2 70-year-olds. And a friend of mine, Randy, was there. I think he's about 65 now, and he's much better runner than I am. He ran across the U.S. But a lot of the people at a longevity, they have much more runner bodies there. Like, I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
I was like 180 pounds at Mississippi.
And, yeah.
And I had knee and feet injuries before I ever started running. So I only run twice a week. I mean, I can't do the training plans that are out there, like for triathlons or for ultra run.
Yeah.
And I found out way back in the early 90s that, you know, if I run a couple, 2 or 3 times a week, and I try and bike and swim, I was able to run in the top 10 or 15%. But I'm pretty slow these days. I was doing pretty well last year, but knees, when you shuffle, you go slow.
Yeah, well, and it's like, just thinking on that idea of like, of longevity, recuperating. So you ran the 50 miler. I think you told me when we were out there, you were staying the night, getting some sleep, but you were going to get up super early and drive back to Oklahoma from Mississippi. Meanwhile, I like had one of our friends who went out there with us who drove. So I sat in the back of her car driving back that night with compression boots on. And it took me the better part of like 2 weeks to get my life and body back together.
Well, that was your first ultra, so it takes a little while. I mean, when I'm in good shape, or I did a hard 10-mile run today,
mm-hmm,
and I'd run 50K on Saturday. You just get, your body gets used to it. And there's things you learn, like I have compression socks. They do help quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I actually had a massage on Monday. Deep tissue massage, that makes a huge difference. And but you know, I the first 500 milers I did, I got in my car like after the awards ceremony and drove back to Oklahoma, which I would not recommend. And I DNF'd the Cajun Coyote 100 in December, and I was running the race, and I had to come back because my wife was going away on Monday, you know. So my plan was to run like 25 hours and get some sleep and then drive about a 7-hour drive back. My wife said some terrible things to me. Primarily, she said, "You're not as young as you used to be." it's a really good race. I'm going to try it again this year. But it had started raining the night before, and I was soaked, totally, completely soaked before the race started. And, I thought I'd be running through like shin deep water, but the first lap was pretty good. It's a 20-mile loop. It's a beautiful course around Lake Shabbat. And second lap, it was shin deep water. Oh, the third lap, it was about 3 or 4 inches deeper. And I was thinking, you know, I can finish. I have just enough time. It was 15 hours and 1 minute to get to 60 miles.
Yeah.
And which I screwed my math up. I thought it was 16 hours. But, you know, I figured I'm going to have to get in the car right after I finish and drive home. And that was one of the things that made me drop out.
Oh, right.
The fact that it was 45 degrees out and it was driving, pouring rain was another one. And it's a rooty course, so I kept trying to run in the water.
Yeah.
And, you know, after like the second time I fell, it was, okay, I had time to walk it, but I, you know, just thought of driving home. So I have a 100-miler in June in the Bighorn 100 in Wyoming. And I have already paid for the hotel rooms for the next night. So yeah. I'm prepared.
Super smart. And that was like the thing that I learned the first time I did it as well. I went and did, it's called the Pine Mountain 40 over in Georgia.
Oh, I know that one. Yep.
Oh, I did it with a friend of mine. It's very rocky on the trails, or just like uneven trails. It's beautiful. And you feel like you are in a scene from The Walking Dead. And so we did it. This friend of mine, she and I, we went over there. She beat my pants off on it and is an amazing runner. And then afterwards, we jumped in the car and we started to drive back. And so we're going to Mississippi. She's stationed in Mississippi. And so we drive from Atlanta to where she's stationed over in Columbus. And by the time we got out of the car in Columbus, so 6 hours or whatever that was, just under 6 hours. It was, we were walking like we were in The Walking Dead too. We were zombies. It hurt so bad. And that was one of those where I was like, I am never doing that again. Do not make it a long car ride afterwards.
Yeah, it really helps to have, you can have a hot bath and wear compression gear. That helps a lot. And yeah, it's a, well, I know I have two friends that last year, they ran back-to-back 100-milers in 4 straight weekends. Yeah. And I just couldn't believe, you know, then they did it. They both did it. And, I mean, I did 2 races, 6 weeks apart, June and August. And I thought that was really, really, really pushing my luck.
Yeah.
But some people can just do it.
Well, have you heard our podcast before?
I just looked it up after Quest told me about it, and but I haven't had time to listen to any of them.
Okay, well, we always kind of get to this point in an episode, and we like to ask the guest, that would be you today, obviously you know that because you are a genius teaching people how to not get colds by washing their hands. We like to ask them, what is their truest adventure in running? Because that's what our season is about, is running. And so that is my question to you. And it's kind of one of those pretty, whatever that means to you in your truest adventure in running, but I would love to hear what that is.
Yeah, especially with like your history in running and triathlons, like that's oh man, I'm super, super interested to hear what you'll say is your truest adventure.
Well, it would be the Fat Dog 120 back in 2014. It was a return to running for me. I'd had knee surgery in 2010. It took me 2 years to get to a point where I could run 10 miles. And I saw the race in 2013. It was going to be on my birthday. And I'd given my wife a pretty excellent birthday present for her 40th. So I asked her if I could have go and run that race in 2014 as my 50th birthday present.
Yeah.
And train for it. I remember to say I'd train for it. And she
right,
said, yes.
You don't want to just be able to take the weekend to run it. You need that like couple of weeks or months to lead up to it where you're going to be not in the house and just running.
Well, I don't run that much, but I did races to work my way up. Like I did a 50K, a 40 miler. I did a 50 miler, and then I did a super easy 100 miler, all as training runs for Fat Dog.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and then I went and did the race. Her parents came from Florida to help with our daughter. And as it happened, well, I have ulcerative colitis. So I'd had a bad flare up. So I was quite ill. And But everything, had so much had gone into this race, time off. And so I went to the race. I was going to either volunteer or run. And then I realized I had no super warm clothes, so I better run.
So I started. So you're at the point where, like, it's race day and, like, mm-hmm. you're having a flared up with your ulcerative colitis. And but you're like, I've already paid. I'm going to go out there, be supportive. I'm going to volunteer at least. Get mm-hmm. out there. And it's so cold. You're like, you know what? I can't stand here volunteering. I better just run. That
yes, in terms that of- was my... Yeah, the ulcerative colitis flared up in July, and it takes months to go away. And so basically I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll just go and keep going as long as I can. And they, if I may break the cutoff, you know, I'll be done. Yeah. And, you know, I felt pretty awful many times, like really quite awful. Yeah. But every time I was so far in the wilderness, like this is a race that has 20 miles, 30 miles between real major aid stations or places you can drop. So, and it turned out to be, I walked all but 3 miles of it. And I finished and I got a buckle and it was a thrill. And I'd stopped and stayed with my father who lives in Vancouver. And I stopped and had lunch with him when I left. And he took ill suddenly in October after the 2 months after the race and died. So I was really glad I'd gone and done the race and been able to see him because we live quite a long ways away. So I hadn't been able to see him for several years. But it was again, I've already said great things about the race. I have tons of pictures on my webpage. In fact, it's my I have a screen. Not a screensaver, but my background on my computer is pictures from that race that change from the last couple of years. Oh, wow. I've done it, and it's so pretty. Now it's not as like Hard Rock is different; it's beautiful too, but that's stark. This one is pretty lush, and if you're down, there's lots of trees and things. So anyway, that's my big adventure, and I took 46 hours and 16 minutes, and it was a 48-hour cutoff.
Wow!
To do that race, and I was. Just totally thrilled and to finish. And I did it again 2 years later and I was 15 or 20 pounds lighter and they added a couple of miles to the race. They added a 700 and something feet of climb and I ended up doing it in 46 hours again. But I moved up way up in the places. They added an hour to everything to the cutoff. And wow. So it had more climb than climbing Everest.
Wow.
But it's again, it's a beautiful race and really well organized, and they do it all for you. You just have to pretty much show up with lots of stuff. And it's the only race I've actually had my mandatory gear inspected.
Oh, wow.
To get to the start, they actually got inspected us twice, and we were inspected along the race course. Because it really goes back into the wild. You're gone, as I said, 20 or 30 miles at times, and... So you get to see things that other people didn't see, and fields of wildflowers where I couldn't even count how many different kinds of flowers they were.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a biologist, so that's the thing that interests, one of the things that interests me. And
So I've got just like a couple of last questions for you. What was that gift that you got your wife?
I got her.
Pretty impressive one.
I got her PhD regalia. Okay, she's also a professor, so she is at the University of Oklahoma. So I got her the PhD regalia, which is the gown and the cap and all the. It's actually quite expensive. It's what you wear to convocation, and the students. We sit up on the stage, and the students come by. So.
Oh wow! Like your daughter must just be brilliant. I can only imagine what the dinner table conversations are.
Oh, they're pretty bad. It was about ice cream today. She has her priorities set.
Yeah, hey, she's still 7. Right. And then the last question I have for you, and then I'll kick it back to Quest if he has any more, but do people, and maybe you already have you done, or do people ask you a lot when you're telling them about this, about Barclays?
Oh, well, I have no interest in doing the Barclay. I've known about it since the early 90s. And there was a fellow at the run on Saturday that had he started it. He got 3 books, but some people ask me, well, nowadays, in the last couple of years, I've been asked about it several times. And, you know, the guy who puts it on lived, used to live in Oklahoma, Gary Cantrell, but it just doesn't seem like any fun to me, you know?
Yeah.
It seems really, 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 really hard.
It seems so, super painful.
Yes, yes, that too. It you know, just,
yeah, I was, I yeah. mean, whew, people have asked me about it, and they send video clips and stuff, mm-hmm. and obviously I'm aware of it and have been aware mm-hmm. of it for several years. I won't say nearly as mm-hmm. long as you. But they send clips and it's like, I guess I'm stupid because there's a part of me that wants to go do it. But then you hear people that have gone and done it and they're like, it hurts.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much straight up and down. I mean, I know a lot of people that back 20 years ago, there weren't that many ultra runners. So I know a lot of people from back then because we were the only people at the races and you know, they just go up and they go down, they go up and they go down. And you know, just, again, it never appealed to me at all. It's like bad water. I have no interest in bad water because I do terribly in the heat.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, but
is Tahoe the dream?
It's pretty, I really like to do it. Well, Hard Rock is what I'm really trying to do. I should have done it when I was younger and fit, but I had other things. And I volunteered at it back in 99. It was wonderful, you know, but I wish I'd done some of the hard things back when I was young. I'm pretty slow now. I set a personal worst for 100 miles last year. I was like 31:21. So, you know, I used to run, my worst was 25:10. And that was for a decade or I don't know how many, dozen or 15 years. That was my worst finish. And the last 5 or 6 years, it's been, I'm just really happy to finish, period.
I tell you what, Earl, if I'm 52 and I've counted or notched 75 ultras, and like, that's not like I did them and I'm done, but the way you're talking about it, oh yeah, I've got one Saturday and I got one next month. I got a 100 miler in June. I think I will be fine with life.
One in June. Yeah. That's my race for the year. So it's a big deal. But, well, I'll tell you, if you want some, it's kind of old fashioned, but so am I. The Ultra List is a really good place if you're interested in connecting with a lot of other ultra runners, including Laz, who puts on the Barkley. It's a listserv out of, you know, Dartmouth. You just go there and search for ultra, and there's a bunch of messages each day, and there's lots of information and lots of talk, and I delete 95%. I'm unread, but I read quite a bit of it. And there's some really good information there. And also you can connect to people. Say you're traveling somewhere and you want to run on a trail nearby. And I've run many, many things I never would have seen. I mean, I was in some place in Illinois. I didn't know there was a rail to trail right there. And, there was also some really nice state parks really close. And, it's a good resource if you want to try and connect with other ultra runners.
Man, that's awesome. Well, look, thank you so much, Earl. We don't want to keep you too much longer from getting that young little lady her ice cream.
Oh, she got it before dinner. Now I'm going to go home and do my chores. So, yeah. Yeah, I had to come into work. We have great internet at the college. So we do a distance learning and online teaching. So we stream stuff.
Good. We appreciate you and we appreciate the college. This has been super informative and I appreciate you taking the time. And so our typical closeout, we'll wind it down and wrap it out. But I just wanted to thank you so much for taking your time and talking with us.
Oh, no. It's one of the second favorite thing I like to talk about. My daughter's the first. So
hey,
we even got her. We worked her in, too. So
yeah,
no, I enjoyed it very much. And I'd plug the Mississippi 50. That's a great race. It really is. I really think it's a good race. I'd do it again, no questions asked, if it were closer.
And I just want to thank you for being on the podcast as well, Earl. And then the other thing is, I just also want to say thank you for making sure that Quest got out of the Mississippi woods and came back to us, because as he tells the story, he wouldn't have made it if it weren't for you. So I have to thank you for that.
Oh, he'd have been fine. Ultra running is mostly in the head. I mean, if you're trained, you can do it really well without thinking, but you can do them on, let me tell you, I run the most 20 miles a week, so you can do pretty well if you just have the right mindset. Like being too stupid to quit, that really helps.
Being too stupid to quit, I'm going to remember that. And on that, my name is Trey.
And I'm Quest. Thank you for listening to The Truest Adventure. True.